Hello and welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast. You join us on another live edition on this Sunday evening as we discuss the last week in Brighton and Hove Albion news. We're going to cover the Wolves game, the Fulham game, and we're going to be looking ahead to a historic evening on Thursday where we travel to Italy to face Roma. But before we get into any of that, let's see who we've got on the show tonight. We welcome Joe. Joe, my friend, how are you?
Yeah, I thought I was over it. And then obviously we sort of wait a day to record the podcast. We let things sort of settle a little bit. And then before the podcast, I just watched the highlights again. So yeah, I'm doing great, Tom. How are you, Tom, though? Are you okay?
Yeah, not too bad. I've had a bit of a week. My wife has got the COVID, so that's been a fun week. But no, otherwise, okay. Can't complain. Chloe, welcome back to the podcast. How are you? I know that you've been jetting off this week to see the Albion, but generally speaking, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good. The football this week has absolutely sucked. But other than that, yeah, living the dream.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? And we also welcome back our Aussie friend, Phil. Now, before you tell us how you are, Phil, I think we need to give a big shout out to Phil because it is currently 7 o'clock in the morning and he is joining us to talk about the disastrous week that has been Brighton and Hove Albion Football Club. So, Phil, how are you, my friend? And thank you for joining us so early.
Good morning, everyone. Pleasure to be here, I must admit. I'm using the artificial daylight at this hour this morning down under. But look, you know, I think these are the more important shows, you know, versus your 5-goal win over Sheffield. What can we really gain from something like that experience? This is where podcasts are made, unfortunately. So, you know what? Someone has to do it. Wear those souls.
Yeah, we certainly are. I always say when we have a podcast like this after a result like we've seen, it's a cathartic experience. So we welcome you live viewers to join us on this cathartic journey. As we are live, please don't forget to drop your comments down below and we will chat about all things Albion this week. Let's get started, guys, by the first bit of disappointing news of the week was learning that Mitoma is likely to be out for the rest of the season with a back injury. Now, this isn't going to have anything to do with the Holgate tackle we saw against Sheffield United, the horror tackle that was. Actually, that's not played a part in Mitoma's injury. But Joe, a huge blow. You know, Mitoma had just come back from the Asian Cup. We had just had a game with two wingers and it was glorious. And now it's been taken away. What do you make of this horrible, terrible news that Mitoma looks like he's going to be out for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think maybe surprised quite a few by saying that I don't think it's an injury that has worried me overly too much because of the amount of wingers that we've got ready to come in. And I know obviously Ansu Fati hasn't quite hit the ground running. Inciso's just coming back from injury. Bononote's been fantastic. Adingra can play on the left-hand side as well. Obviously, it's a huge blow to lose Karim Mitoma. I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, he won't be a loss. He absolutely will be. Watching him and Simon Adingra on opposite wings is just an absolute pleasure to see. But I think had it have been João Pedro out for the rest of the season, I think I would have been losing my cool a little bit quicker. But yeah, obviously gotten to lose Karu. We know what he can give us. De Zerbi has spoken about the importance of Karim Mitoma losing such a huge star. So we've just got to see how we can adapt and, you know, players have really got to step up to the plate now. Ansu Fati, you step up to the plate because it's been, you know, since he's come back from injury, he hasn't lit the world on fire. Have we given him enough time? I don't know, possibly. But yeah, he needs to step up.
Yeah, he certainly does. I mean, Chloe, what have you made? It's another injury to another wingers. And the wingers are so pivotal to the way that Roberto De Zerbi wants to play. It's unlikely we'll see March again for the rest of the season. Mitoma now gone. and Ciso coming back from injury, Fatty coming back from an injury himself and looking woefully out of form, it just looks like we've got just a dinger. So how worried are you that we're going to see another Albion star out for a long period of time?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a worry. Very disappointed to see he's going to be out for so long, because I do think he's very important to us. And it was nice having two wingers, wasn't it? What was that, one game? And I know we've got other players that can come in, but I'm not really sure any of them have really set. I think the trouble is we've got a lot of injuries. And when players come back, more go out, and we can't sort of slowly introduce the injured players back in. So I don't think, like Purvis, like Fatty, they sort of, I think it does take time when you come back from injury to sort of get up to speed, and they're not getting that time because we've then got other injuries. I think it's very bad. I do think we probably should have signed another winger in the January window, but we didn't. So we've just got to deal with that now and hope it doesn't affect our season too badly. The amount of injuries, I think, is absolutely unprecedented. Quite a few sort of long-term injuries that I just never saw coming. It is a worry for sure.
Yeah, it's as I say, this, the wingers especially, I mean, I know everyone's important in a game of football, but the wingers are so pivotal to the way that De Zerbi wants to play, as we say. And I can't get my head around why we let Sarmiento go back out on loan to Ipswich. You know, we brought him back from West Brom. We knew that March was going to be out. We knew Adingra was going to be at AFCON. We knew Matoma was going to go to the Asian Cup. Fatty was just coming back from an injury. I can't quite wrap my head around that one, personally, because I mean, I get the arguments about like, oh, why bring in another player if you've got a plethora of wingers in the wing waiting for their return? But Sarmiento, as one of our own players who has got experience playing under De Zerbi in the Premier League, why he was sent back out on loan.
But I'm going to make the argument to you then, Tom, because obviously we didn't know how things were going to go. We obviously thought Adingra will come back, Matoma will come back, Fatty wouldn't get another injury, and Ciso would hopefully come back nice and quickly as well. Had that all happened, and we had then four or five different options that we can play out wide, what then happens to Jeremy Sarmiento from the beginning of March onwards?
I suppose it's like what Chloe's just said. Having Sarmiento in the squad then allows those players to come back without feeling rushed. Yeah. You know, we saw Matoma's fatigue before Christmas, and Ciso was supposed to be back in December. That was obviously been prolonged. Just one of those where I can't quite wrap my head around that. And I mean, Phil, in the last couple of games, we've seen Brighton set up in a 3-4-2-1 with two very narrow, they're not wide players at all, are they? They're very like narrow central attacking players. And it just hasn't seemed cohesive in attack. We've played some nice football at times against Everton, against Wolves, even against Fulham yesterday. There were glimpses, but it's not the natural formation. So it looks relatively worrying that we look like we might be setting up this way for the foreseeable. What do you make of the Matoma injury news?
Yeah, well, I think you can kind of all drag it into the one point that we're just seeing so many players out of form right now. The last two games speaking directly to that. And I suppose part of the problem is you've got so many guys playing out of their normal comfortable positions. You know, none more prevalent than Van Hecker lining up in the midfield yesterday. But, you know, even someone like Purvis Estupiñán, who I know is probably going to cop his whack on this show at some point today, but when Matoma was out of form before Christmas, we were speaking to the fact that he was just, you know, so gassed, playing so much football, not being afforded the chance to be rested. But on top of that, it was the fact that he didn't have Purvis behind him and they couldn't form that combination, which worked so well last season. So all of a sudden, we've got Matoma out and Purvis is being asked to play sort of a little bit higher up the ground without his Batman or Robin, whichever one it is on that left-hand side, playing above him. And now he's horribly out of form. So it's just all sort of compounding and snowballing into this really frustrating, mucky situation right now. And it's hard to wrap your head around the formations, but, you know, particularly when you've got so many guys playing where they're not as comfortable as they could be, it, that just adds to the effect as well.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. It certainly does. It's just compounding everything, isn't it? Out of form, out of position, and not having that strength in depth on the bench. We're seeing a lot of young players on the bench. I mean, let's talk about Wolves really briefly. We saw Cam Poupignan, he started against Wolves, you know, young lad who's been out on loan this season to Cheltenham in League One, wasn't getting much game time there, getting game time against Premier League opposition Wolves in the FA Cup. I mean, with that game, we sort of have to talk about it because we haven't done a podcast since then, and I don't want to make everyone relive it. But Joe, we're seeing again, you know, huge individual errors costing the team. And I think, as Phil's like saying, you know, we're playing players out of position. We're playing in a formation that isn't necessarily our strongest. These are the sort of times where we need everyone to sort of step up and be solid and sort of make sure that they're on their game. But we conceded a goal after, what, 79 seconds, thanks to an absolute clanger from Jason Steele. And I'm not gonna hate on the guy, but I do think we have to hold him accountable for what happened. And Purvis, again, not tracking his man in the box. Just a defensive calamity, Joe.
Yeah, and I think you've got a mixture of people trying too hard, trying things that they wouldn't normally try, and not sort of second-guessing themselves because they don't maybe trust in the teammate next to them or the player behind them in the formation or the goalkeeper behind them because, again, we're seeing the goalkeeper rotation continue. And clearly shipping goals left, right, center, it's not working at all. No one can tell me that this system of swapping the goalkeepers around is a system that we should continue to adopt. And whilst we can sit here and say that, you know, De Zerbi said it from the start, he wants to give guys equal playing time, it's just not the done thing. And Arsenal tried it, a couple of other teams tried it, and it didn't work. So they're stuck with their number one goalkeeper. We're in March, and we can't tell you who our number one goalkeeper is. That's a huge concern. And our goals conceded tally proves it. Easy.
The 10th worst goals against in the league, in terms of Premier League games, 10th worst goals against. But I think between us and like the sixth worst, it's like a goal in it. So
what is the thinking behind it? I'd love to, I think, Phil, you used this phrase earlier yesterday, I think. I'd love to give some truth serum to Roberto De Zerbi and ask why? How can an elite coach think that this is the done thing to do with goalkeepers? I get that he trusts Jason Steele. I get that Jason Steele came in at the end of last season, gave us some really good, solid performances and shot us to European football. Fantastic. I love the guy. What a servant he's been to this football club. How professional he's been throughout every bad thing that's happened at his time with us, having to bide his time. Bart Verbruggen is the next number one goalkeeper. Start him. He is going to be fantastic. It's no surprise that our last five wins have come with Bart Verbruggen in goal, I believe.
I do have to own something that on the WhatsApp group chat this week, I was saying that, you know what? I think that Bart Verbruggen has become the number one keeper we've seen in the last two games. And then obviously we saw Steele in that FA Cup game, but you look at that team and you think, well, it's mostly their B team plus a few 18 players, obviously. But then, I was kind of rattled when I saw that he was starting against Fulham. Look, perhaps you could look at that lineup, which we'll get into shortly as well, and think, well, you know what? Perhaps that was pretty much their B team as well, and we're saving Bart for Roma, which, again, doesn't make sense to anyone because why are you resting a goalkeeper? Maybe it's that. Look, the other thing, perhaps, Joe, is that, again, this... this is a squad that has a lot of inexperienced players mixed in with a few veterans who are kind of, in theory, setting the standards in the locker room and all the rest of it. And perhaps it's sending a message to Bart that his standards just aren't quite there yet to just grab that number one job with both gloves, so to speak. And it's teaching him the right habits and standards for the long term. And Steely is someone that is that consummate professional off the pitch. I don't know. Again, this is just another theory, perhaps. And, you know, it's sending messages and standards to the wider playing group that there is acceptable standard and there's not. And I don't know, maybe that's got something to do with it. I'm just throwing that thought out there.
Yeah, I think that's... That's fair. And I think, I think Tom just agreed with you there, Phil, about saying Steele is a great influence in the squad. So I do think you're right. I think, he's got that experience in leadership. And Tom goes on to say, I think we should loan him out to a championship side. So we still have him there. And then Verbruggen number one keeps, and then Sherpen number two. Yeah, of course, we've got such a plethora of young goalkeepers at the squad. Tricky MM now. Oh, go on.
Get Rushworth in.
Yeah, I mean, Rushworth, the Swansea manager actually says that he thinks Rushworth will be there next season at Swansea on loan. Just want to come back to this one from Tricky MF says, "Now that was a deflective cloth cross. Pupignan knew if he took out Belgrade that he'd get booked in experience, not to see how dangerous it was around him." Yeah, I mean, yeah, Cam there, but he's not a wingback. I was really surprised not to see Cam as one of those central attacking midfielders flanking the forward there and putting a wing back, because Adingra's played wing back for Union Saint-Gilloise. So for me, that was a bit of a funny one. But, it was another defensive error from, Steele, clanger from him not to catch that, Purvis not sharp enough. And Chloe, we then didn't really test Jose Sarr in the Wolves goal for the rest of the game. A chance falling right at the death to Jason Steele, ironically enough, who came away with the second best XG of all the of all the players on the pitch. I mean, just another painful night for Brighton.
Yeah, I do think once we conceded that early goal, they sat back a bit. And while we had plenty of the ball, we just didn't really do much with it, unfortunately. And we just seem to struggle a bit in that final third at the moment. Almost reminds me a bit of the old Potter days, but yeah, I don't know why, but we really can't score. I do think we miss, obviously, the likes of Pedro and Matoma, but...
Yeah, it's really tough, isn't it? When you've got your number one striker out in João Pedro, as Pozzy Poz has already said, Pedro is a huge miss. His movement off the ball. And I know Dagan's digging into some stats that show Ferguson and Pedro and their partnership and how effective that has been. But yeah, similar to the game we saw yesterday against Fulham, just not really testing the goalkeeper, which I think is the biggest shame for me. And, De Zerbi needs to come up with a way to attack these teams that will just sit back. And especially if we're going to continue to concede so early. That's the fourth time in, I think, I can't remember how many games it is now. Andy Naylor put the tweet out. It was the fourth time in the last 11 away games that we've conceded within 7 minutes, which, yeah, is not great. And we need to wake up when we start games, because we're just really slow.
The seventh time in the last 12 away league games that Brighton have conceded in the opening 21 minutes. That was from Naylor as well.
Oof, I mean, it's just awful. Awful. I mean, I put out a tweet earlier about saying how our defence is awful. And I got panned for it. But, you know, well, I don't know what else to say.
Manipulated stat, Tom. Manipulated stat. Yeah.
You know me, Joe. I love a manipulated stat. Let's move on then, I suppose, to the main event, which we all really want to talk about, which is, of course, Fulham. And we have to talk, as you've already said, Phil, about the changes. We saw a huge shift. We had a very baffling starting 11. Seven changes after Wolves. Seven. Steel, Dunk, Van Hecker, and Estupiñán, the only players that kept their place after the FA Cup loss. Lamptey, Webster, Veltman, Belaba, and Ciso, Lallana, and Ferguson come in. We played a game with six defenders. Six. And we still conceded three of the worst goals you could ever likely see. Well, I say worst goals. They were errors from us. I think you have to say that. I don't think Fulham had to work particularly hard for their three goals. But six defenders, six. Very baffling. And I assume it's true. But on Match of the Day, Alan Shearer said that we've done 103 changes so far this season. Phil, how are you supposed to build cohesion when you're making this many frequent changes?
That's the problem, isn't it? I feel like our cohesion has been just slipping further behind almost every other team in the top flight as this season has unfolded. And I know I made a point in the group chat before I went to bed last night that, you know, I think maybe De Zerbi's got a bit of this pipe dream thing that he wants every player in his squad to almost have positionless capabilities and adapt and be able to play here and there and have this like telepathic sense with teammates that they know what this person's going to do because it's all part of this De Zerbi system and the De Zerbi scheme. And, you know, there's an irony that they look less cohesive than just about every other team in the Premier League. And how can you blame the players when the changes are just coming so and so frequently? And, you know, yesterday was like the starting 11 was just a complete head scratcher, a bit of a debacle. As you said, four central defenders starting the game, one of them in the midfield, obviously. And I don't know, you just kind of got the feeling that maybe De Zerbi, I mean, obviously with a massive thought to this Thursday in Rome, but it's kind of like, well, let's try and turn this into a 45-minute game and then we can bring on Adingra, Gross, all the others. But let's try and get to halftime nil all. And that's never a good plan, in my opinion.
No, do you agree with that, Chloe? Do you think De Zerbi had one eye on Thursday? Because it was just, as you say, a baffling starting 11.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that. I just wish we would start our strongest 11 and then, you know, get a couple of goals, get comfortable in the game and then take them off rather than trying to do it the other way around. You know, I read Gross wasn't fit to play the 90. He had some cramp after the last game, which is really poor timing considering... obviously, Gilmore suspended as well. So that sort of midfield duo, neither of them could play. And I did quite actually like the idea of Van Hecke in that sort of defensive midfield position because, you know, he is good with his feet. He does go forward quite a bit, even when he's been playing sort of as a centre-back. And he is quite positive in his play a lot of the time, but... I just did think it was a lot of changes. Seven changes is just too many. I feel like you can rotate, but it's how you do it. And this keeper rotation, I'm just so sick of it. I feel like, yeah, we've got no cohesion because they're not that used to playing with each other. It seems like I feel like partnerships are always quite important. Like before when we've had, you know, Matoma and Purvis and Dunk and Duffy, that's sort of the famous one. But sort of these partnerships within our team that we've had, I feel like this season we don't really have that as much because we've had so many changes. And I feel like you can make changes, but seven at once just seems way too many. And I wish we would, you know, change two players one game and then the next game change a different two players, sort of mix it up a bit that way instead of just changing most of the squad for a game. And yeah, there was definitely one eye on Thursday's game. And I just hope we can get a result on Thursday because that was clearly sort of in his thought process with that team.
Yeah, Tom, I would love, if Dagan's listening, I would love, Dagan, for you to run the numbers for how many changes the goalkeeper rotation contributes towards the 103 changes that we've made in the Premier League. I would love to know how many times we've rotated them, because that must run up a big number.
You'd thought so. Just my two cents on the Van Hecker situation in the midfield. I do agree, Chloe. You know, his ability to progress the ball in the, from the back is excellent. For me, I would have played Webster there, mainly because if he makes a howler, then there's still defenders behind him. Joe, just really, really, really quickly, you talked about how Aston Villa, also competing in Europe, haven't made as many changes to their starting 11 as frequently as we have and haven't suffered the same sort of injury crisis we have. Do you believe that because we're exposing more players to injury, they are becoming injured?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And, you know, when you're rotating players in, playing them for half a game, as Chloe said, if Pascal Gross isn't fit to play the 90, he's being pushed in at a time where we're trying to push for a goal. Therefore, you're giving more physical output because you're chasing a game. You're putting your players in really sticky situations where they've just got to push themselves to a physical limit. And you're using your whole squad, making so many changes. Therefore, you haven't got players to call upon when, okay, you've started Adingra for 20 games. Let's say he's stayed fit for those 20 games. Bang, he gets injured. Okay, now who do we call upon? And you're not losing the players' time because Adingra wouldn't play full 90 every single time, every single 20 starts. You would have players come on as a substitute for less time and less pressure. And I just feel like, I don't know, this excuse of because we're in so many competitions, it doesn't fly with me anymore because of how, just like, if you look at the second most changes in the Premier League compared to our changes in the Premier League, it's a huge gap, absolutely massive, like maybe 45 to 50 less. And yeah, it just doesn't fly for me anymore. We just got to find some cohesion from somewhere. We've got to go to Rome, a really tough place. They're in extremely good form at the moment. Dybala scoring goals for fun. And we're looking at our peers next to us thinking who's gonna pull us out of this rut. And it's got to be one hell of a performance in Rome to justify making so many changes if he had Rome in mind. But I would imagine he definitely did. So if we don't see a massive performance in Rome, I think questions will start to get flown left, right, centre.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as Rodas points out here, you know, definitely missing Billy Gilmore. Really looking forward to having him back for the game against Roma. Yeah, it's about partnerships. As Chloe says, it's about consistency. It's about, you know, having that almost telepathic, you know, communication with, as Chloe rightfully says, Dunk and Duffy, they just knew where each other were going to be. And you can't keep doing that if you keep changing the starting 11. So yeah, just the constant changes are hurting us. I understand the logic behind it with the squad as thin as it is. But even so, we're putting ourselves under pressure with defensive errors. I mean, let's talk about that first Fulham goal. Calamitous. not once, but twice from Webster, and Purvis once again, not covering himself in glory. Poor header from Webster in the midfield. Purvis completely messes up then. And then Webster shows the incredibly one-footed Harry Wilson the inside. So, of course, on his left foot, his stronger foot, he's going to just rifle it at goal, still relatively unsighted. Not much he can really do about it. And Phil, it's just another just infuriating individual error that is costing the club dearly. Because, as I say, these are the sorts of games where, especially with six defenders on the pitch, you want to keep it tight.
Yeah, like, I know we played an FA Cup game midweek, but there's no excuse for not doing your homework on certain players in the Premier League. And it's not a tough one either. Like, I don't know why Wilson was being shown so much space back on the inside to fire that shot away. It's baffling. It's absolutely baffling. And frankly, it's inexcusable for players at this level to not understand which attacking threats, you know, what are their best avenues to get shots on goal. So that's just frankly unacceptable. And obviously it was bad in the lead up as well. I don't know why Webster's not just using his body more to try and protect the ball rather than attempt some flimsy pass to another out of form defender. But, you know, I was more upset personally by the fact that Wilson was shown so much space on the inside than the actual error to try and head that ball to Purvis.
Yeah, I think I want to make this really clear. This isn't about attacking players. This isn't about saying, oh, they're rubbish, they should never play for us again. That's not what we're about on this podcast, but we are about obviously critiquing what we see, and we can't not talk about these errors, because there were all three goals. Chloe, second goal, dunk, just watching the ball come to him. His player gets across him, nods in. Too easy. That's, you know, that's League One level defending from our captain, who should know much better.
Yeah, again, just very disappointing. We made it way too easy for them. I don't think any of their goals were really anything special. It's just poor defending, and then they were managed to put the ball in the back of the net. I think we actually had the same amount of shots on target as they did as well, but I think they had better chances because we just gave them to them. And yeah, Dunk didn't do very well there. I'm really going to struggle actually to pick my man of the match for this game, because I think a lot of players did make errors.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tough one for man of the match. Maybe Belaba, who probably was the only one of the very few who maybe could have held his head high. Who, by the way, was given one of the worst yellow card decisions I think I've ever seen. The referee didn't even want to give it as a foul, and then booked him. Just mind-bogglingly infuriating, that just terrible refereeing performance there. Joe, go on, Phil. You want to chip in?
Yeah, just one more thing. At halftime, the Fulham's expected goals was 0.23, just for the record. So, like, they created two chances and they scored off both of them. Ours wasn't far behind. We had eight touches in the box to their four in that first half, if you can believe that. And, you know, I know we'll probably dive into Belaba a little bit more as well, but he was also to blame for that second goal, because it was his guy that got past him to break that line from inside the defensive half. And that's what led to that breakaway as well. And he did that. There was a point in the second half where he did that as well. So, you know, the defense was the poor defense was starting way further down the pitch as well.
Yeah, it was just error.
The poor defense, because we've got no bloody midfield. The teams just run through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, like, I watched it against Wolves, saw it against Fulham. Teams just have a field day, just passing it in the midfield. No one challenging them, no physical presence. And that's what you hope Belaba would bring. And it's unfair, I think, to put this pressure on him so early on in his Albion career, because he's been brought in, as you said, Tom, having played how many competitive games in France?
Less than 10. I believe.
Less than 10. And then you're bringing him into a team that have just got into Europe, expected to fill the boots of Moises Caicedo, who last season on his performances was one of the best young central defensive midfielders. So there's already an insane amount of pressure on him. Then playing Van Hecker in midfield as well, which, you know, before the game we have a laugh. We think, oh, that could be a masterstroke. He might turn into the best central defensive midfielder we've ever seen. Nope. In fact, Dunkey was having to push up to fill in for Van Hecker at times, and hence leaving more people exposed at the back, trying to run back to cover our goal. And teams must absolutely love playing us. They could just fill the midfield with all the quality that they possess. I honestly think that barring Burnley and Sheffield United, that our midfield might be one of the worst in terms of defensive output. Great for Pascal Gross going forward. Great for Billy Gilmore picking passes. I love his work rate. But when you really do think of taking them out, what midfield we have left, there's nothing. Literally nothing.
It's almost like not replacing your best midfielder. I don't want to get started on it.
Can't say that, Tom. You've got to be grateful. Shut up, mate. We were almost relegated in 1997, so you've got to be grateful.
Look, I'm gonna beat this old drum one last time. We no longer have that midfield screening of the back four. We're going to concede more goals. Gilmore and Gross, excellent, but they're very, very similar players. Very good technically, very good on the ball, great eye for a pass. But they are not defensive midfielders. Billy Gilmore is getting better at that job, and I think he's been amazing this season, absolutely amazing. But we miss Moises Caicedo, and I get that, you know, the argument, but you're not going to be able to replace him unless you spend 50 million, blah, 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 blah.
But spend 50 million then. The money's there.
I don't think it's bad, Joe. I think it's just there were other options available who were more experienced than Baleba, who could have been brought in. And, you know, there was that, is it Gorna Duth from Salzburg? He's got loads of, you know, senior appearances under his belt, well within our wage structure and, you know, pragmatic sort of, you know, how we do things in transfer business. But they always say, like, I mean, they always use the infamous Roy Keane and Paul Scholes. You have Paul Scholes is your technical brilliant player, pings the passes, gets assist, brilliant. But next to him, you need that midfield general who's going to boss the midfield. If you're going to play a midfield two, that's what they've got to be. If they're too similar, you just get beaten. And Harrison Reed yesterday did all the simple things really quite well. And I think that's what we just haven't been doing, the simple things well. Set the third goal, Pascal Gross trying to do a Cruyff turn. But just why? Where he was, just why do that? So, I mean, again, I don't want to like lambast players here, but individual errors are killing us. Adama Traore, easy as you like, you know, just a really, really, really frustrating afternoon. And I know it's, you look at these results sort of on their own, it can become really disheartening, and it's better to look at the wider picture. But I just think the performances this, especially in the last couple of months, have been really inconsistent. You know, we go and beat Palace 4-1. We beat, you know, Sheffield United 5-0, albeit against 10 men. But then we put out these absolute stinkers where we don't test the goalkeeper until the 80-somethingth minute. And that's what I find quite worrying. And I know I had a bit of a, not to do, but a discussion about the term worrying. Because it's a scale. It's not, you know, you can worry about the rain like you can worry about the existential crisis that is climate change. One doesn't negate the other. But I do worry about the inconsistency of our performances because I never know what we're going to get. Are we going to get absolutely thumped and not bother turning up? Or are we going to thump someone else? I think that's just sort of the roller coaster that is watching Brighton and Hove Albion at the moment.
Grant's just said in the chat, Jack Hinshelwood is a great defensive midfielder. Watched him a lot for our under-21s. I just want to argue Jack Hinshelwood is probably our best right back at the moment. So I'm afraid he's got to stay there when he comes back.
I agree. I mean, Grant, I mean, me and Joe had this conversation, didn't we, Joe, about like what our Albion 11 would look like if we didn't sell players. Mm-hmm. And it looks really good. And I think you put Lamptey in at right back. And I said, no, Joe, no.
Yeah. And then I questioned whether it should be Gross to banter your worst Albion 11. And then, yeah, Jack Hinchelwood. But I think for Jack Hinchelwood, and I know, Tom, you say he's a central defensive midfielder playing out of position. Where does he become a right back? A little bit like when players change position, like I don't think Trent's always been a right back. And then he becomes one through the academy, or now he's sort of morphing into a midfielder. When do we say that Jack Hinchelwood is our number one right back?
I think he's already sort of convinced me enough of it this season. I mean, for Lamptey can't stay fit for longer than 5 minutes. He did next to nothing against Everton. Didn't really do anything yesterday. Veltman, I've always argued, is a centre back that plays at right back, and has been absolutely excellent, really good in one on one situations. I mean, the infamous, you know, marking Zaha out of the game against Palace. But he's another player that's coming back from injury, and he's just looking really, really rusty. Jack Hinchelwood that's been like the silver lining of, of all these injuries, is that young Hinch has come in as a right back and he's played in that inverted right back role where he makes those runs forward, comes into the midfield, and he's scored, you know, a good couple of goals, you know, from that position. And I can understand Grant not wanting him at right back, because De Zerbi himself has said he's a really good midfielder, but actually, out of Hinchelwood, Lamptey and Veltman, based on what I've seen, I'm probably choosing Hinch at the moment. But that's just me.
No, that's fair. I'd like to know, Grant, why you don't want him at right back, because I feel like he still gives a lot, as Tom said, scored some goals, and has done really well there. So yeah, it would be interesting to get your take on where you would like him and sort of the qualities that he could bring.
Tom, just to add, in the year 2024, it is actually reasonably predictable that we're going to play badly. We've lost 4, drawn 2, beaten 1 Premier League team and beaten 1 Championship team in our Premier League games. It's been atrocious this season, frankly. This year, calendar year.
Yeah, the calendar year has been really poor.
Bring back the Europa League, please.
And João Pedro.
And João Pedro, yeah. I'm wearing my Europa League shirt today because the Europa League makes me feel good. I'm not sure it will after Thursday, but it is Solly March Day on Thursday. So, you know, the stars are aligning.
Yeah, let's hope so. Let's really hope so. Grant, this is an interesting one. Jack Pascal and Billy midfield. I mean, Chloe, when you're so open defensively and midfield is so poor, I mean, my logical explanation would be, well, put another man in midfield. You know, you'd be that Jakob Moda, go Billy, Jakob and Gross as a midfield three. What do you think De Zerbi needs to make different tactical tweaks, or is it a case of, you know, keep doing what you're doing until it gets it right? How can we get out of this rut, Chloe? Because as Phil says, 2024 has not been a good year. Europa League is starting again. We're out of the FA Cup, which could turn into a blessing, I suppose, although it doesn't feel like it.
I just want to point out, Phil, it was harsh to call Crystal Palace a Championship team.
Fair. Well, Grant, I'll come back to that point about Lamptey in a minute. But Chloe, yeah, what do you reckon? What do we need to do to get out of this rut?
That really is the million-dollar question, isn't it? I'm not sure. I think we need a bit of consistency with the lineup. So I don't want to see too many changes, but I think we need to pick a keeper and stick with him. For me, it would be Bart. I just wish we'd keep the same player in goal. I think, yeah, that's a good point about maybe bringing in another player into midfield. As obviously we don't seem to have much on midfield. Maybe if we've got another man in there, it can help control that a bit better. But I do think it's just a difficult question. I hope De Zerbi's got a bit of a better idea of to what we need to do better. Because I just feel a lot of our players just aren't in form at the moment. So it is difficult for the team to perform. So it's just difficult, I think. I think once Ferguson gets a goal, he'll start scoring. So I really would like to see him get a goal. And I think we are struggling for goals at the moment. Because a lot of the players that we used to score in are out, unfortunately. I'm not sure. I think Dingra's got a goal or two in him, so he should probably. I'd like to see him start most games, but otherwise, I don't know.
Tom, can we talk about Barco?
Yeah, of course. I was supposed to mention him in the Wolves game because he was the best player.
I mean, Joanna's just pointed out, what about Barco? I mean, you know, what was it, 15 minutes that he came on against Wolves and created, what, four chances? I don't get De Zerbi saying he's not ready. I think he's a very raw player, don't get me wrong, but I think that sometimes what you crave is to see a player that's going to come off the bench or start a game and not have any fear. I think our players are playing quite tensely at the moment. And when Barco came on against Wolves, you sort of felt that left-hand side relax a little bit more, knowing that he was there to give that creative output. I really think he could be a big player for us this season. I don't know if he can play in Europe. I'm not sure if he's been registered in time. I would love him, but we need to see more of him, because that little cameo against Wolves, I get it. You know, it was in the FA Cup. Maybe Wolves weren't playing their full team, but it was still a strong team. And he didn't look out of place. So, what an introduction for Valentin.
So, Roberto De Zerbi's been saying he's not ready. But why is 1-0 down in an FA Cup round of 16 match an acceptable time to bring him on, but 2-0 down against Fulham, when you look at their starting 11 and you look at just the absolute calamity that turned into, why is that not an appropriate time to bring him on and give him more experience, 15, 20 minutes at the end? I can't wrap my head around that. Does anyone have any theories?
Not at all, but I do
question. I guess putting pressure on him too early and bringing him into a high-pressure Premier League game. I think that would be my only theory. But, yeah, Tom, you go.
It's like, I think it was Dagan that said it about, like, why is it okay to play a player like Purvis who knows the system but is woefully out of form, but a player who's young, eager, who doesn't know the system, why is one wrong but not the other? Because for me, Purvis at the moment doesn't deserve to start. His form is terrible. So play Barco. He looked really exciting and direct. Just play him.
Can we check Purvis and Stupinian's studs next game? Because I'm sure they're made of ice. He's just slipping all over the place. I'm sure Fulham overwatered the pitch or something, because our players weren't ready for how slippery that pitch was. And couldn't stay on our feet.
Was it Purvis that slipped just before the Facundo shot that hit the post? I think it was.
Fatty.
Was it Fatty? Oh, my mistake. Yeah. But yeah, it's just, again, I don't want to berate people, but yeah, I just think there's a lot of players at the moment that aren't fit or aren't in form, and
about the Evan Ferguson chance as well. He just dinked past Leno. Thinking if that's a striker in form, he takes that past Leno and just slots it into an empty net. People are right in the chat saying that he's just a player extremely low on confidence. I saw red when he missed a few of those chances and said some things that, you know, I now regret saying about Evan Ferguson on a private chat. But I think you do have to give him that leeway. 19 years old, you know, there's a lot of pressure to score goals for a Premier League team who are chasing European football again. So, yeah, we just had to wait for him to come good. But then, you know, you sit there and say, oh, we've got to wait for him to come good. How long can we wait? We can't wait any longer. People have to start stepping up now. We haven't got games to throw away.
It's not just the missed chance as well with Evan yesterday. Like, look, there were a couple of moments where I was actually a little bit promised. Maybe the expectations are starting to lower, but it's the touch at when the ball's at his feet, he just doesn't look comfortable. There are times where, you know, the pass comes in and he's dispossessed so easily. And it just feels like, it's probably a confidence thing as well, Tom. I know you sort of look at the game with that more technical eye than I do, but I just think that his touch just looks horribly bad for a striker of that quality. That is obviously it's pivotal for a striker to have just exceptional touch with the ball at your feet, but that just does not look there with Ferguson right now.
I'd be inclined to agree. I think his hold-up play also leaves a lot to be desired. What Ferguson usually is very, very good at is his shooting. He's normally very accurate, puts a lot of sting on it, a lot of power. And I think he is obviously clearly quite low on confidence, and that will play a part in his game. And it's just a real shame that he hasn't been able to sort of been eased back into the starting 11. But because of the sheer amount of injuries we've got, it's pretty much an all hands to the pump situation. I'm quite conscious that we've obviously had a very negative podcast. When I say negative, I like to think we've been quite fair in our critique. I don't think we've said anything overly terrible. No one's called for anyone's blood yet or anything like that. So that's always a plus. I think we've been quite honest in our analysis there. I know some might criticise us for being too negative, but I don't know how you dress these last two performances up.
Can I say something about the social media comments towards Jason Steele on his Instagram post? I urge people not to screenshot and share. I urge people to report and block. I think that's the only way that you can get people to realize that that's the wrong thing to do when they get their platform taken away from them. I understand that they can then make another one, but they'll soon get the picture. Giving them attention is exactly what they want. So those 2-3 comments would have felt like they've won now because they've got their point across to thousands on social media. Ignore, block. The comments were hidden for a reason. I hate that social media highlights that there's hidden comments because you're more inclined to click on the hidden comments and then it'll show the stuff that they're trying to hide. I find that baffling. But yeah, please block and report.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. Chloe, let's be positive. Let's look ahead. Two very disappointing results. Does that all go away if we manage to get a result on Thursday in Roma?
I think I'll definitely be feeling more positive if we do manage to get a result against what is a very good team in Roma. I think our league form would obviously still be a bit of a worry, but I think be nice to see some sort of what's the word?
Reaction.
That's the one. Sorry, brain fog. Some sort of reaction from this game because it has been a negative couple of games and I think we really do need that sort of uplifting game and hopefully on Thursday it will really lift us up and then we can carry that into the league as well.
Definitely. I mean, Joe, it doesn't have to be a win. A draw would suffice for me, but a huge game. Also, a really fantastic moment in the club's history. You know, last 16 of the Europa League, it is phenomenal. And we have been, again, very negative on this podcast, or certainly sort of have a more negative sort of slant on things because of the performances and the results we've seen. But the fact is, we haven't done what teams before us have done when Wolves and Burnley, for instance, have, and West Ham as well, don't forget, when they've competed in Europe, their league form has often, you know, fallen off a cliff entirely, finding themselves in the lower bottom half of the table. We haven't done that. Sure, we haven't done what Aston Villa have done and, you know, pushed on to Champions League sort of spots like we would have wanted. But it's not the end of the world, is it? But as Chloe says, you know, a result in Rome, even a draw, could be an absolutely huge moment in our season just to sort of get us a bit more confidence back.
Yeah, I think you make a really fair point. We could easily look at, you know, teams that are doing better than us, but I think that's not really the outlet to view things on and look at the teams that, you know, have been relegated because of a European campaign or have been close to relegation because of a European campaign. So I think that's really important. Grant's just saying in the chat, did you hear Warren Aspinall on the caller having a right set after the Wolves game? No, I didn't, but I did see about it on Twitter, which, you know, Warren's very outspoken and, yeah, has his opinion and has his say. I think it's
Warren's really, really honest.
That's what I like about him. And but he's just very, this is my opinion and that's it. So, yeah, it's a good way to be. It's a massive, massive chance for us to really just put all of these awful league skeletons back into the closet and just focus on something that we can be so proud of, because, you know, we're in the last 16 of the Europa League. We've got a 1 in 16 chance to go all the way to Dublin and win that trophy. It's going to be a huge task. You have to beat the best to be the best. And we're up against a very, very tough task. And if we can overcome that, we can overcome anything. So I feel like this is the big hurdle of this season. If things don't go quite as we plan on Thursday, I think this is where we fall off. And it will be a disaster. I'll put that in quotation marks because context is everything. But if things go right, this could be the springboard to a very exciting end to the season.
The positive is that we do get Tom's boy back, Billy, in the midfield, and there were no new injuries to report.
Full name him, please? Billy Clifford Gilmore. Thank you.
Sorry, William Clifford Gilmore. But you know, in theory, we can name a decent starting 11 on paper if we do it properly. And when else would you possibly want to name your strongest possible 11? You know, than this particular game in Rome, obviously. So the positive is that we could, in theory, name a reasonably strong starting 11, push from the jump. I don't know how aggressive you want to be in a first leg that's away from home, but let's go and try and win it. You know, why not? Let's have a crack. Let's have a crack with our strongest possible lineup in.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really important to remember as well that in knockout games, form doesn't count for everything, because we are an unknown quantity to Roma and they are an unknown quantity to us. Yeah, I know that Daniel De Rossi was there at the game against Fulham, but I don't know how much he would have actually gleaned from what he saw. So here's a question for you all. I'm going to come to each of you on turn in this, and please drop it in the comments section as well, guys, because I'd love to get yours as well. Starting 11. For me, it is Bart in goal. Then I'm going to go with a back four. Back three. No. I'm not going back three. I would go back four, and I'd probably say Lamptey, Van Hecker, Dunk, Purvis, Gilmore and Gross in the middle. Fatty and Adingra on the wings, Buonanotte in the 10, and I'd probably say Welbeck up top. Welbeck might not have the the finishing instincts of Evan Ferguson, but he's got the experience, and he's got the movement that is more likely to cause Roma problems. So that would be my 11. Joe,
I think the only thing I'd change would be Fatty out for Nciso. Starting Nciso, I'd love Fashion. It. Sorry, Chloe, was that what you was going to say?
Yeah, that was exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
How terrible is it that I forgot Nciso was fit?
I would
get Fulham, and I'd already forgotten. Actually, I'm going to go back and change that. I'd change Nciso. I'd go as strong as we can. Another change I might suggest, maybe Lallana for Buonanotte. If Lallana's fit enough, he's just played most of a game against Fulham, so probably not. But again, it's that experience that I think we could really use. I think someone said it in the chat as well. Milner, I know he's had a really, well, not a great season with us so far, but it's that experience. And I think when you're in a game, last 16 knockout game, that's when you need those players with that experience to sort of help you through. So that's where Welbeck, Lallana and Milner really become such important members of the dressing room. And we need it. We need those guys to help guide, especially the younger players, through that, in my opinion. Phil, what would your starting 11 be?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with all of that. I'm on the Nciso bandwagon on the left as well. And yeah, I think, you know, you look at the success that we enjoyed last season, pretty much sticking to that typical 4-4-2-ish or 4-4-1-1, whatever you want to call it, formation. That's where we saw the best out of Purvis at left back. And I think you're going to see the players just play a more comfortable game with that setup, rather than asking your fullbacks to play sort of a bit further up the pitch in a slightly newer role. Lamptey, of course, as well. I know I mentioned Estupiñán at the start, but we're asking Lamptey to do the same as well. So I like that. I think that's good. It gives us options on the bench as well. All of a sudden we do have an Igor if something was to happen to one of our defenders. I suppose we've got Jakob as that replacement in the midfield if something was to happen to Gross or Billy. So then all of a sudden you've got options up front. Fati, Evan Ferguson, they can come on. Maybe we're looking to chase a goal later on in the match, and you bring Evan on and just say, see what you can do. Like, I don't know, and let's try and get heaps of corners, because Dunk seems to be our only avenue to goal right now. The head of Lewis Dunk.
Yeah. I will take it. I will take anything.
I think. If there is a back three, sorry, Tom, the only back three I would accept would be Van Hecker, Duncan, Eagle. I think they work very well together.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, Joe. If that was the case, I really wouldn't play Purvis as a wing back. And the last time we saw Tarek as a wing back against Everton, I said that on the day there, he did nothing. He was next to useless. Bar the goal line clearance, he did literally nothing. Another shout would be Carlos Baleba, maybe alongside Billy Gilmer in the middle, and push Pascal to 10. That could be an option, as we know that Pascal is our chief creator. So I think there's obviously, but for me, you go back to basics. You go back to the 4-2-3-1, or as you say, Phil, the 4-4-1-1, whatever you want to call it, whatever numbers you want to throw around. Go back to basics and just be tough to beat. Be switched on from the first whistle and just don't give them an inch. I think that's all you can do in a first leg. The fact that we're at home for the second leg, if we can get a result from that first leg, a win or a draw, the ball is very firmly in our court, because our form at the Amex this season is much better than our form away. I know we haven't been beaten in mainland Europe this season, which is amazing. But
Now you've said it.
I know, but those are just facts, Joe. But at the end of the day, I don't believe in like karma or not karma. I don't believe in all that sort of stuff about because I said it's not going to work now. I just think that it'd be hard to beat, be switched on, and then you give yourself a great chance. Nothing. We going coming out of Thursday like 2-3, you know, nil down on aggregate will just not do us any favors. So there you go.
I think if all else fails, I hope everybody enjoys and celebrates Solly March Day, my favorite annual day of the year, and celebrates it with their family and friends, has a great time, and fingers crossed we can get get 3 points. It's not the group stage anymore, Joe. It's knockout football.
Hello, Ashley Barnes.
I know, right? That's a very niche reference. Was that after Wrexham? We beat Wrexham on penalties or something.
It was a cup game and post-match comment.
Hilarious.
It was great for the 3 points. There's a throwback to all you people out there. Right then, we've been wittering on now for over an hour. So I'd like to thank all the people in who've been watching us live. It has been hopefully a cathartic experience discussing two pretty poor results and performances. Hopefully it's been cathartic for you listening to us moan about them. Hopefully in the week we will get to have a much more positive experience. So, you know, stay faithful, positive vibes, and as ever, keep it real. Isn't that what we say, Joe? We say keep it real on the Albion Obsessed podcast.
Got to do the hand actions as well.
Sorry. I still can't live that down, keeping it real, guys.
No, you can't.
But no, thank you very much to Joe, Chloe, and Phil for joining me this evening. Thank you for you guys. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe for more content if you haven't done so already. You can also check out One Klopp Shop and use the code ALBIONOBSESSED to get 10% off your order if you're into retro shirts. Talking of which, let's hope the shirt behind me soon becomes a relic of the past, because it, like the yellow shirt a few years ago, it's not doing us any favours. Wherever you may be, whenever you may be, we'll see you again soon. Take care.